Hey bosses, before we get started, this week I would like to thank you guys for supporting the show, leaving all these amazing reviews on iTunes, and for all of our new Patreon supporters. Go to investlikeaboss.com, click on support the show on the top right under Patreon, and check out all the benefits. Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny FD, and welcome to episode 144 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I am still in Sri Lanka, and Sam is back in Charlotte. Welcome to the show.
God, our life is boring, dude. Boring. I feel like I've been in this box for 5 years. Take me out of this cell.
You know what? Speak for yourself. But I actually moved locations in Sri Lanka. I'm actually in a co-working space right now. I moved to the only co-working, co-living space in the south of Sri Lanka. And it's been awesome. I've been surfing every day. I'm living with four European girls. Three of them are yoga teachers. And it's been tons of fun.
God. I was hoping the story was going to go something more like the Sri Lanka family that was feeding me every day decided they didn't want to feed me anymore, and I had to relocate.
No, but to be honest, it was a hard decision to move. Even though it's only a 15-minute drive, you know, down the road, I was so comfortable in my old place that I was scared to leave it. But thank God I did, because my life is so much better now.
Well, what happened? Did they decide just to open the beaches back up so you could go surfing? Because obviously that is one of the biggest pieces, right, for a lifestyle adjustment, just being able to go to the beach every day.
Yeah, so what it was is I was in a big city, and there's lots of locals there, lots of police there, and they just shut everything down, including the surfboard rentals. But now I'm in this little beach kind of town that there's nobody here except for tourists. And, you know, they just have nice resorts, and basically, you know, and you can't see the beach from the road at all. So cops aren't driving by and just seeing people all the time. So ooh. I think they just kind of don't care.
Yeah. Oh man, that makes, damn it. I'm jealous. It was fine until I talked to you, Johnny. It was fine.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. And yeah, it's been great. You know, there's hammocks everywhere, big garden, you know, private. I basically have a private office that I'm sitting in every day with AC, and my old place didn't have air conditioning, so I used to dread the afternoons, and now I don't mind it at all.
Well, I too am also making a move tomorrow, but I'm not going to tell you where. It'll have to be a surprise for the next episode.
Okay, I'm excited. Well, it's a surprise that you're even back in Charlotte, because for a while you were down in South Carolina, right?
Yeah, it's only 2 hours away. Actually, I probably would have stayed there much, much longer, but I just felt like my parents wanted me to leave so they could have their own space. They're used to living alone. I was kind of monopolizing the entire basement floor. But yeah, man, it's, you know, I think everyone, at least in the States where I'm talking to, everyone's just at the end of it. Everyone's just, people that are young and healthy are willing to take the risk just to get back some normalcy of life. And you're seeing a lot more activity, but man, this just so much of the economy is just completely shut down. And I think the market is not nearly a good reflection of the overall economy. And in fact, so many people are just saying the market's not the economy. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in this episode. It'll parallel to some of the stuff we're talking about, but smartest people I'm listening to and hearing from Howard Marks, who wrote Market Cycles. All of his people are saying 2022 before things get back to where they were in 2019. So to buckle up for the long haul.
Yeah, the high stock prices just don't make any sense. I mean, people are buying and spending a lot of money online. So e-commerce is doing amazing right now. People are buying and selling websites. People are building new things. People are taking tons of online courses. And people are just ordering things, you know, whatever they can get to their house. But that's only a small percentage of the total amount of money that people normally spend. And the total spend is so much lower right now. And people aren't, you know, most people aren't, you know, aren't working. So it doesn't make any logical sense why the stock market has pretty much recovered. So we'll see what happens.
We will see what happens. But I think it's even more important just thinking about the future. Everyone now working from home, and this episode, we're going to see some of the trends that Flippa is seeing, which I think are just incredible. The type of insights that some of these platforms have on what's happening in the world, that data is absolute gold. And this is all about owning your own future. You know, don't be dependent on someone for a paycheck. How many people are thinking right now, is this my week that I'm going to get furloughed? What's that word? Furloughed?
Furloughed.
Fired. Furloughed. That was a new one. I had never heard of that until this, this pandemic. But yeah, I mean, how many people are worried about getting fired? How many people already have been fired? I think unemployment now in the U.S. is past 17%, 16-17%. We'll see what the jobs report holds this Thursday, Friday. It's always interesting. But one thing's for sure, there's more carnage to come. And people are going to be increasingly looking for ways to secure their future through this pandemic and then beyond it.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And right now, everybody has an opportunity to, you know, create a side hustle, you know, whether it's start, you know, creating a blog just on the side, or creating a content site, or creating an e-commerce store. There are all opportunities out there to either, you know, create one from scratch, or maybe buy one from a site like Flippa, you know, add your magic to it and grow it, or just run it for that income. So I do think that this is good timing to have on Blake, the CEO of Flippa. It's the biggest marketplace to buy and sell websites or digital assets. Some people call it the eBay of, you know, buying and selling online businesses. But I think we're going to talk to Blake and find out it's actually a lot more than that. It's really matured and grown. You know, it is a marketplace like eBay, but it's closer to the Amazon of buying and selling online businesses.
Yeah, Flippa has been around for a long time, and we've already had on Ace Chapman. We had on Johnny, you interviewed Kingmakers. We've had Empire Flippers on a couple of times. All those episodes, very popular. And increasingly today, I think even more so, this is all true. So it's great to have on Flippa. I feel like with Flippa on, we've really covered the topic quite well. And we'll continue to dive into it, because there's this massive shift from retail to online that's going on right now. And we need to be on top of it and use that magic, Johnny.
Yeah. And to give everyone kind of a preview or a hint, e-commerce, the stores that I run myself, but also all my friends' stores, and, you know, I have a big network of dropshippers and also people who sell on Amazon. Things are on a tear right now. Every day looks like Black Friday. Sales are up, you know, 300 to, you know, 500%. It is insane. I mean, people who have online businesses right now that are able to keep things in stock are making more money during this lockdown when nobody has a job than they have, you know, for years before this. It's really a great time to be an online business owner.
Printing money, Johnny. Printing money. And thanks to you, buddy, for the stock tip, Shopify. You're the one that bought that, talked about on this podcast first. Ever since then, it was on my wish list. Price went down. I picked it up at 370. I think it's at 800 now, more than doubled. Ooh. in a matter of probably 3 weeks. Unfortunately, I didn't put a lot into it, but I definitely put enough into it to make it meaningful. And I owe you a cheeseburger next time I see you.
You know what? I want a double-double for that.
In Sri Lanka, I'll buy you anything you want that's edible.
Man. I love it. All right. So let's have on Blake, and then let's come back after the episode, after the interview, and you and I can talk a little bit about our experience buying and selling websites and digital assets ourselves.
I love it.
All right. Here is Blake, CEO of Flippa.
Blake, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah, it's a pleasure to chat under, trying circumstances globally, but nice to see you doing well. So thanks for having me on the show.
Likewise. We're managing two of the most difficult timelines, East Coast US with, are you in Melbourne or Sydney?
Yeah, Melbourne, Australia. That's right.
That's right. Nonetheless, a difficult time zone to manage. It's 8 p.m. mine. What time is it there? 10 euros?
10 a.m. So I'm probably doing the best of the two of us, I guess, at 10 a.m.
Oh, well, I would disagree with that, sir, because I think I am actually doing the best of us right now. With 8 p.m. is my time to shine. It's when the work winds down and the wine usually opens. But I figured out this thing that after one glass of wine, I sort of have this deficiency where I lose my intellectual brain and can't ask meaningful questions. So I found a solution. Yeah, I found the solution. Have two glasses or three if you're going to do a podcast while having one. So so I just cracked a bottle of Cab from the West Coast of the USA, and that'll be my treat there in this episode, except talking to you.
Yeah, well, 10 a.m. here, so coffee in hand, but looking forward to an Australian Pinot a little bit later tonight.
There we go. I love it. Well, before we get into the heavy stuff, and I would love to just, I think the listeners would like to identify a little bit with, you know, who's running the show at Flippa. You guys, Flippa has a long history. I think a lot of people know about Flippa, but maybe just a quick tidbit kind of on you and your background.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again. Yeah, Flippa's been around for about 10 years, so it's certainly got history, and we're having a good time of it right now. I think it's a really interesting time for digital asset investment, buying and selling in general. But yeah, me personally, I've, well, first and foremost, I sold my own asset on Flippa going back 6 years ago now, which was a marketplace for specialty food. And so I have some experience selling an asset on the platform, which I think is probably interesting and important for our customers to recognize. And I will say, actually, it's 30% of the staff base at Flippa has historically been a customer of Flippa, both on the buy and sell side. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah, myself, I live in Melbourne now, and I've spent the last 10 years back in Melbourne. And back in Melbourne here, I ran my own marketplace. So that was a two-sided marketplace, peer-to-peer, much like Flippa, small business owners who specialized in the production of artisan foods would list on the marketplace and find a path to a community, which was interesting, worked reasonably well, but obviously not well enough. Otherwise, I would have not parted ways with that asset. I also worked at on the leadership team at Xero here in Australia, Xero's small business accounting software, and I was able to witness firsthand just the power of SaaS and a SaaS platform which adds value to the small business ecosystem. And I must admit, kind of fell in love with the small business ecosystem at that time. I think that much like here in Australia, the small business ecosystem is kind of the lifeblood of the American economy. It's almost the lifeblood of any great economy. And so very much fell in love with small businesses as a whole. After Xero, I actually ran an online travel business. It was called Luxury Escapes, or is called Luxury Escapes. And that was the fastest growing business in Australia under 5 years old, from Xero to $200 million in transactional revenue over that time. So that was a good time of it. And again, fantastic to witness a business scale from Xero to hero pretty quickly, and wonderful just to watch and manage a team which was so customer centric in its operations. And that's something that I've certainly tried to bring to Flippa. I think we're doing a pretty good job at. Before that, Sam, I was actually in the US. So I spent five and a half years in the US, living mostly in San Francisco with a small stint in New York. So very much a global citizen, experience across multiple industries from travel, publishing, small business, and now in the digital asset space. So yeah, it's been an exciting ride and an absolute pleasure to now be at Flippa, where I've been for the last 18 months.
Interesting history. Are you partial to the East Coast or West Coast of the USA?
It's a great question. I think the West Coast is a little more livable, in specifically California. But my favorite city is New York City. It's my favorite city around the world. And I think it's many people's favorite city. And for me, that's just because I did develop an outstanding friendship network there, and that matters a lot, doesn't it? And they were able to show me the best bits of a great city. And New York's a lot of fun. It's alive all the time. It's got a wonderful spirit about it. That's my opinion, at least. Mm-hmm. And I think doing business there is you just get a real kick out of it, and you can plot a path, and the path is respected. And I find that a very, very appealing part of New York City.
Where did you find the hustle or the business drive more significant, San Francisco or New York?
So I think that and this is a very obvious comment, but the entrepreneurial DNA in San Francisco is palatable. And so you get a sense pretty quickly that the residents of San Francisco are the tech elite. You get a sense pretty quickly that even those people who aren't in the tech ecosystem, they are surrounded by the tech melting pot, and therefore they are willing to adopt new ideas really quickly. And I think it's an amazing environment to incubate an idea and test out an idea. And I think you'll know pretty quickly whether it's going to work or not. but I think that doing business in New York is more hectic in a positive way. I think that it's relationships flourish in New York. I think that it's more conducive to networking, in my opinion. I found that it was a little more welcoming to an outsider, at least in the beginning. And I think that probably means that doing business there from the outset is probably a little easier, at least in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. Oh, great.
What do you think?
Well, I've always been partial to the East Coast. I grew up here. I always found that the spirit and the hustle and the drive, something happens when you land on the East Coast from Florida to New York that just... it invigorates you. And maybe that's just because I was born here, but I always found myself extremely productive on the East Coast and a little bit more lifestyle based on the West Coast. But I haven't spent as much time in San Francisco as you have. And I don't know that LA has quite caught up to San Francisco. Certainly not places like San Diego. It's too lifestyle based. So
yeah.
Yeah, but that's interesting. Great. Appreciate that background on you. So Flippa, I mean, you guys have been around for a while. Would love to hear a little bit about, you know, where you guys are at as a company, some of the growth, and maybe just some of the numbers of what's happening underneath the platform to give listeners a little bit more of an idea of who Flippa is.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, first and foremost, we're a marketplace. It's peer-to-peer. I think that it's important that people recognize what is a marketplace and what is not, because I think that can sometimes be misunderstood and misconstrued. So we're absolutely a marketplace where peer-to-peer individuals who own assets list those assets for sale. Individuals who want to either start something from scratch or own something which is income producing, shop on the marketplace, and they can shop from a collection of digital assets, sites, stores, apps, domains, and just generally digital properties. So we don't do anything that's not digital. Under the hood, there's around 5,000 new assets listed on the platform each month. And those assets can be sold in one of two ways. They can either be listed as a fixed price asset, in which case a buyer will place an offer and a seller will decide whether to accept that. Or you've got the more eBay type user experience where a asset owner can list on an auction basis, in which case they're setting a reserve. And there is a huge community that then is matched to those assets, and be it fixed price or auction, we have an uncanny ability to drive more eyeballs to a good quality asset than anywhere else worldwide. And I'm specifically alluding to the digital asset space. And it really services, I guess, two types of people. There's the individual who's just starting out and they're looking to get into the online space for the first time. They're looking at, building something that can supplement their income, in which case they're buying a relatively inexpensive digital asset, like a template or a starter site, all the way through to those people who are looking to supplement their income or run a high performance online business, which is income producing and a lot bigger. So these are individuals who will spend between $10,000 and up to about $2.5 million is the biggest asset we've sold on the platform. Our sweet spot is around that sort of $30,000 to $50,000 territory. So you're talking about digital assets which have been around for a couple of years. They've been run by people who have either used them to supplement their income or it's full-time income. They've reached a time in their, I guess, entrepreneurial or small business life cycle where they feel like realizing some value from that asset, and Flippa is perfect for them. So we talk a lot about the people who build communities. Classic example, crochet website sold on Flippa for $90,000, sold within 72 hours of listing. had just over 2,500 buyers view the asset, walk away with $90,000. The individual who sold it, I think she was 65 years old. She can now go on to retire.
What?
Probably wouldn't have found a buyer for that asset anywhere else in the world. So we pride ourselves on representing the creators and makers. We're not a broker. It's very much about a community who thrives together to help each other either realize value in what they've created or create new value.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, so you say you're not a broker. You are a marketplace. So
correct.
In terms of the buying selling process, is it basically a hands up in the air? It's your due diligence. It's your responsibility on vetting the company and the asset before you buy it.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of that by nature of it being a peer-to-peer platform. It really depends on what has been listed. So most assets are absolutely sold on a true peer-to-peer basis. Mm-hmm. But critically, the platform is there to do a few things. It's there to enable the community to comment and to point out where something isn't as it should be. It's also there for the community to praise and help the quality assets rise to the top. And so that's critical in for all marketplaces, and it's critical for marketplace dynamics. The other piece I should point out is that where it's a high value website, or if it's a high value site, store or app or any other digital property, we have an account management team. And that account management team is there to help the seller and also be a conduit to the buyer. And they're providing advice along the way. They're providing advice by way of the listing process. They're providing advice by way of the negotiation, but they're not brokers. It's still the seller's responsibility to provide the detail around their asset. And it's the buyer's responsibility to work collaboratively with the seller to understand the nature of that asset.
Right.
And we think that's a really important process, particularly as this particular industry thrives and there's going to be tens of millions of assets over the next 5 years available for people to buy and sell. Mm-hmm. It's very much going to be community driven. The one thing I will say is that there's lots of services on offer. So for example, we are working very, very hard on verification at the source. Mm-hmm. And so there's some beginnings of that today. Now, they're not amazing, but there's some beginnings of that. So of course, when an asset lists, it can connect its Google Analytics data. And so you can verify the traffic origination and the nature of that traffic, be it organic, direct, social, or otherwise. You can also connect QuickBooks Online. And so you can connect the accounting data straight from Intuit's QuickBooks Online product. Now, that's just two sources, but our ambition by December 31st is to have 150 sources. Now, that's pretty exciting, because what that will mean is that not only will we be able to present data out of the source, but we'll be able to build insights around the assets which are listed on Flippa, which becomes very, very powerful for the buyer base and very, very powerful when a seller thinks about how they position themselves against everything else on the platform. There's some other things people can also buy off the shelf to help them out. So we have things like listing review and optimization reports. They can buy due diligence. So there is a lot that the marketplace offers, but we're not brokers. It's a marketplace and it's typically peer-to-peer.
Talk a little bit about pricing, Blake, and listing price. Is there guidelines for the sellers to come in and say it should be priced at X or it needs to be priced at X? And I guess a second part to that consideration is what percentage of listings actually sell at the price that they're listed for? Is there room to negotiate there?
It's a great question. We sell around 40% of the assets that are listed on the platform. But I don't actually have the answer around what percentage sold for the price they were listed for, either lower than or above. So let me take that one on notice. It's a really good question. But what I can do is talk a little bit about pricing. And what I will absolutely admit is it's tough, particularly in a peer-to-peer context. You've got sellers who are less experienced listing their assets for the very first time. How does someone who's run a crochet blog for 20 years know the true value of that asset and know how to price it? So to some extent, the one of the benefits of having the world's largest buyer base looking for digital assets is that they do absolutely help you out with price by nature of the negotiation. So firstly, there is a guide price. So when someone lists their asset on Flipper, what we do is we look at the inputs. So the inputs will be obviously revenue, and that's annualized as well as available on a month-to-month basis. Expenses, and therefore a calculation around net profit. The second thing we look at is traffic. And obviously that's more important for a content-based ad site than it is for an e-commerce site, and even less important for an Amazon FBA or Amazon Associates account potentially. But we look at these inputs and we then provide a guide price. Now, how accurate is that guide price? Well, that guide price is only as accurate as the Flipper Index. So the Flipper Index looks at 50,000 assets. But of course, the nature of the assets that are being sold on Flipper are evolving very, very quickly. And so there's some assets where we don't actually have a robust index from which to pull guide pricing data from. So what we are working on right now is a really, really strong insights-based valuation API. And we can use all of the negotiation data that's happening on the platform, even if an asset doesn't sell. We've obviously got all of the data where an asset does sell. And then we've got some industry insight that we can layer to that. And so that valuation API will then be made available for the purposes of valuing the asset, for the purpose of listing the asset. And then that insight will be available to buyers as well. And the form that that takes is still up for grabs, but the team are actively working on it. And I've seen some pretty exciting stuff around that. So I'll admit the pricing's hard, but we are absolutely working on improving that. And as you say, it is very much up to the seller to decide the price. But the good news is with a marketplace as big as ours, buyers can start to dictate which way pricing goes.
Yeah, right. What do you see in terms of multiples for different categories of site, whether Amazon FBA, content sites, e-commerce, et cetera? What are you seeing? Do you see standard multiples across these categories? And is there a specific category that commonly and typically yields the highest multiples?
Yeah, so the really obvious answer is that a good quality SaaS business yields a higher multiple than a content or e-commerce business. But there are some averages. So when we look at the 50,000 or so assets that we've got in the index, on average, a content website, which is backed by ad dollars, be it an affiliate program powered by Amazon Associates or other, be it AdSense or other, is 1.95 times. Now, we don't talk in monthly multiples. A lot of brokers do, and there's debate as to which is the right way. We talk in annual multiples. So 1.95 times. And then that's 1.95 times SDE, so seller discretionary earnings. Now, the max is 6 times. So you can see that there's a huge difference between the average and the max. And that's because there's some assets out there which buyers are willing to pay overs on because the asset is high traffic and less well optimized for revenue currently. And so the max is 6 times. For e-commerce, it's a little bit less than that. So the average is 1.85 times and the max is 4.5. SaaS, the average is 2.7 and the max is 4.8.
And sorry, you said max is based on the max that's ever been sold on the marketplace?
Correct.
Got
it. Max multiple.
So when we like look at what's going on in the world, and I don't want to focus too much this episode around a downturn or the pandemic, but there's no doubt that it's world as we know it and work as we know it's going to change. How it's going to change, probably a little bit still TBD, but more and more people want to take their earnings into their own hands. More and more people are getting comfortable working from home. Digital assets are clearly the winner and driver in this, you know, through this massive type, enormous shift that we're going through right now in the world, you know, but everyone is figuring out like, what the hell do I do? How do I get started in this? Do I buy? Do I build? You know, it's just, it's an entirely different skill set than a lot of people have ever encountered in their career or line of work. And I guess this just leads into the buying process and a lot of people starting to look online. Like for instance, my girlfriend's like, I want to buy a digital business. You know, how do I get started and where do I look? And of course we know Flipper is an established place to do so, but for the less experienced buyers, you know, how do you guys recommend, do you have any guidelines that you recommend in terms of a due diligence process to, if people are looking to buy instead of actually build it themselves? You know, it could be a, you know, it could be a very unfamiliar world. I didn't know if you guys had any type of steps or documentation that you encourage people to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. And great question. I mean, the first thing I'd say is, one, I agree. I think that, you know, this is an unprecedented time and we're going to see more people become part of, you know, what we might describe as acquisition entrepreneurs or the own your future generation. It's going to thrive. And that means that there's going to be a lot of people looking and a lot of inexperienced people looking, and they're going to need all the help they can get. So let's firstly just talk about the numbers and why it's so exciting. So the good thing is that for those people looking to do this for the first time, the buy-in is significantly lower than other asset classes, most often anyway. And so you could argue that it's a lower risk asset class. And so let's just put that in numbers. So let's say I buy a $15,000 content website on Flipper or anywhere for that matter. Let's say that that asset is making $500 a month. So that would mean that I've paid 2.5 times for that asset. So $15,000 asset price, it's making $500 a month. That's 2.5 times. So your annual return on that, should it continue to run as it does, and of course, we always encourage that people optimize a website after acquiring it, but should it continue to run at its current performance of $500 a month, your annual return is 40%. That's really, really good. so it's one of the last remaining undervalued asset classes. Now, of course, you know, the stock market is up and down right now, and we're still very early in sort of seeing that play out. But the reality is digital assets will be a place where people look to spend their time. So now the question around the process of what you should do. Now, the first thing, and I'll get really, really tactical here. The first thing is take your time to browse and have a look for something that you would consider to be a safe bet. And so I would encourage that people spend minimum 30 days browsing before they actually start to place bids and make offers on any given asset. You want to get a sense for what's out there, and you want to get a sense for what's going to make you happy when you finally take over this asset. The piece around that as well is you get a sense of values just by looking at the assets alone. And so you want to get yourself to a point where you know what you have to spend, but you certainly don't want to spend more than you feel comfortable spending. The second thing, and I should say, and I will get to the due diligence piece, but think about your own subject matter expertise. So what can you do to add value to the asset? And that's a really important piece of the browsing process. And then finally, I would argue that people should always be looking to buy something that they can imagine working on. So what are you actually interested in? Are you interested in crochet? In which case, look for crochet websites. Are you interested in food? In which case, look for food. Now, on the due diligence piece, people should obviously always look at the data. Now, what does that mean and how do you do that? You would always request read-only access. So if it's Amazon Associates account, a video walkthrough or the data on a listing, regardless of where you're buying the asset, it's not going to cut it. Ask for read-only access. Jump into the Amazon account and have a look specifically at the performance of each product line, what you're making, and understand what Amazon's rates are on that revenue that you've originated. Mm-hmm. Request a breakdown of every cost. You'll often see a P&L which says, you know, $500 a month in hosting. Great. Is it 500 or is it 465 one month and 525 the next? Request a breakdown of every cost. Get into the detail of those costs and understand what you're up for. I'd also try to understand customer acquisition dynamics. Mm-hmm. And so what are people actually spending to acquire a customer? And do you understand how they're doing that? And is that something you've got the capability to continue on with? I'd also get a very clear read on what assets are and what assets are not included, because many sellers own multiple assets and they actually use some of those assets to optimize for performance of the one they're selling. So it's important you get a very clear read on what assets are included and not included. Hmm. And then finally, number five, understand what is working well today and what's not working so well. And once you get through all of this, that will typically give you a clear read on whether you're ready to go to the the next step, which is, you know, finally place that offer, have that offer accepted, and then go into an inspection period where the assets are there to be seen, and you can inspect and reject if you so require to, if you need to.
Now, Blake, all these questions and this due diligence process that you just put out to us, is that going on with multiple potential buyers at the same time, or is this sort of exclusive at that point to one buyer to try to close that deal?
Great question. It can happen with multiple buyers if you're doing it in the negotiation stage, i.e. the flipper discussion forum, or it would be exclusive to you should you be deemed either the winning bidder or having an offer accepted on the flipper platform. And people, and each buyer is a little bit different. So for example, right now, we've got a buyer who was awarded the asset. It's a $300,000 asset, just as an example. And he has made it clear to the seller that he will be conducting full due diligence post-offer acceptance. So that's that example. But you do see in other cases, a whole heap of buyers doing what we might call DD light or preliminary due diligence, where they're asking for read-only access and 5 to 10 other buyers are doing so at the same time.
Of all the deals that have been going through Flippa, surely you guys have seen some deals that haven't been super clean when they got completed. Maybe there's a dispute. Is there anything that commonly comes up that you're like, oh man, these, like, they just clearly missed a step in some basic due diligence? Is there anything that's common there that people seem to miss a lot?
Yeah, so the one thing that I'll point out is that we do sometimes see price adjustments on the basis of due diligence, no different to getting a builder or a plumber to inspect a home after you've looked at it, after you've placed an offer and that offer been accepted. It's a little bit similar here. So you might have a $100,000 asset. All of a sudden, it turns out to be a slightly different position, maybe by way of the cost of contractors or maybe by way of the hosting fees being higher than what is actually being reported once you get into the detail, in which case there's price adjustment. The other thing you will see is buyers will sometimes acquire assets which require a skill set which sounded easy on paper, in reality is something which is beyond them. And so, you know, maybe a e-commerce site is generating the vast majority of its revenue through, maybe it's generating the vast majority of its revenue through social advertising, Facebook advertising, et cetera. And then when somebody takes over that asset, they just don't have that capability or competency at all, in which case, you know, they grab the Ferrari, they drive that Ferrari fast into a tree, and then all of a sudden the asset's worthless.
Right. Oh, man. Well, I could see it being a very exciting journey in acquiring your first business or even your first couple, or having one win and then kind of jumping quickly into a second or third one and skipping steps. It's sort of a, you know, it's a flaw of a lot of entrepreneurs. Naturally, entrepreneurs are very excited and opportunistic and jumping into new opportunities. So I guess it just goes with a, you know, word of caution, but also making sure that as part of your process that you dig doubly deep into the due diligence stuff. Man, I was like, it was maybe on our quarterly updates or something, but we were talking about online businesses and how just so many people are looking online right now to acquire digital assets. And we were just talking about the pros and cons and risk involved. And especially with, say, affiliate sites where maybe the majority of that content site is based on one affiliate partnership and how you're really at the whim of that, you know, that affiliate partner to for that long relationship and also for the revenue. And then out of nowhere, it seems like, and I just literally heard this a couple of days ago, I haven't looked into it, that Amazon affiliates is lowering their commissions really drastically. And I can't even imagine how many sites in the world and how many businesses in the world are literally built on Amazon affiliates or Amazon associates as a, you know, as their revenue model. It's the biggest affiliate network in the world. Like, what are you hearing about this?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? And well, my first thing I'll say is it hurts.
Yeah.
As you say, there's a lot of business owners content operators, site operators, I should say, who have just literally had the guts ripped out of their business. Mm-hmm. But you're an entrepreneur, and I'm running a business. We all know the importance of diverse revenue streams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the case all over the world right now that those people who have one revenue stream that has been impacted are hurting a lot, and those people who have diverse revenue streams have been able to go back to the well and optimize where they've been less impacted.
Mm-hmm.
So it clearly hurts the performance of these owners, and it clearly hurts the valuation of their assets. Amazon Affiliate as a concept, Amazon Affiliate as a network, it's not going anywhere. You could argue that it's only going to grow by nature of Amazon's growth, by nature of Amazon's growth in other markets where it's been less tapped into. And I think that there's a whole heap of people. I mean, 99% of people wouldn't even know what the Amazon affiliate network was. So it's only going to grow, but with that, competition will increase as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we would always encourage people to think about the niche that they're in and the competitiveness of that niche. But yeah, I mean, I think I can only just nod my head and agree with you that, yeah, they've just lowered their commissions. That's real. That's happened.
Yeah.
And it hurts.
Yeah. I mean, any layman could look at a site and say, okay, the site's generating $2,000 a month, but it's based on one supplier relationship or one affiliate relationship. What happens if that relationship dries up or they change their terms? But yeah. With Amazon, everyone's like, but it's Amazon. You know, it's the biggest affiliate network in the world. And I think a lot of people put too much trust in Amazon to maintain what they were built off of. But it just goes to show the importance.
I see a lot of people. In fact, I've got an email sitting in my inbox from a banker saying, look, we're looking to back a whole heap of entrepreneurs who want to buy FBA businesses. And mm-hmm. I must admit, I get it, obviously. But it is interesting when you see buyers just very, very interested in one particular business model, and sometimes actually dismiss assets which have got a strong diversification strategy. And for me, that's fraught with danger.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that brings us to, what is your favorite type of business? You see these things getting listed every single day. What, you know, if you were to go back to being a buyer and seller, and maybe you are still a little bit on the side, I don't know. But what intrigues you? What lights your eyes up? Like, hey, I love these things.
So you know what I love? I love when a business isn't optimized well, mm-hmm. and so they've got a community which is buying what it is that they offer, but there's just so much damn obvious improvement that can be made, such that you're getting a good deal. So mm-hmm. I like businesses that are transactional in nature. That's just me. So I like to look for businesses which are built on some very simple tech and where they can prove that they've got strong return usage of that tech. And an example of that sold on Flipper, and I must admit I use the example a lot, but it was an asset called watermarquee.com. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they provided watermarking software for photographers. And if I remember correctly, and remember that, you know, what photographers are doing with that is watermarking the images before they send them off to a client.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously do that to protect the ownership of that image until it's been licensed or acquired by the client. Now, it was such simple tech. It was, in my opinion, a poorly designed website. And what people could see quite obviously, as could I, is that you could easily optimize the user experience. But better than that, you could optimize the commercial nature and proposition. It was a one-time perpetual license to use the software. You could turn it into a recurring monthly. There was a lot of price elasticity, in my opinion, because the community was so used to using the product and using it so aggressively, and clearly had seen it to serve a purpose. And what I loved about it mostly was just the simplicity of the tech. Anyone could understand it. It wasn't easy, wasn't hard to articulate, and wasn't hard to use. So I'll typically look for small transactional businesses.
Got it. I mean, when looking at these businesses, I imagine so many of them are sort of single dimensional, and
yep.
you would have a lot of different ways that you could scale it, whether it's new markets or additional technology, new content, maybe new product lines. But I was kind of curious at if you see a lot of sites that are geared towards an individual market, like let's say like nutritional supplies in Vietnam, mm-hmm. for instance, where it's something that's really market centric. Do you see a lot of those, or are most of these platforms somewhat geared towards more of an international global audience at this point?
Yeah, it's a really cool thought, and I think that there's going to be more of this. I think that the passion economy will stimulate a whole heap of niche subject matter that is then sold to a niche audience, and that niche audience will most likely be geared to a particular geography, mm-hmm. or at least in some cases. So I think that this is an emerging trend, and we do see it. We see sites that sell, for instance, you know, merchandise for a specific K-pop band. And it's an e-commerce store, and that e-commerce store orientates only around the specific K-pop band, and the consumer audience for it is almost 100% South Korean based. So that would be an example, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's widespread. I mean, at the moment, in fact, as of today, you'll be able to filter assets using Flippa's search tool by geography. Mm-hmm. And so if you're based in Canada and for whatever reason you really only want to look at assets which are owned by Canadian sellers, maybe that adds some confidence to your buying process. You'll be able to do that, and I think that will start to reveal more specific niche type sites for a niche type buying audience as well. So I do agree that it's probably an emerging trend.
Yeah, it's cool. It was just kind of a thought process I was going through. Someone had asked me for advice because they wanted to buy, they're interested in nutrition and farming and e-commerce and all this stuff. And I was like, well, you know, but they still have a job. And I said, you know, well, what you should do is, and actually that Vietnam example is kind of a live one. I said, you know, find somewhat of a content site that's geared towards nutrition in, say, Vietnam. Now, I know that's not extremely easy to come by, but yes. If you could find that, then... You know, buy that because it's already started. It's out of the Google sandbox. Maybe it has a little bit of community generating some type of revenues. Then add the farm layer. Go and you know, start a little farm and make video content about that farm, and then start the e-commerce site where you're actually creating a product and then you're selling maybe product from your farm. But don't do it all from scratch, because if you want to build that entire piece from scratch, wow. It's going to take you 10 years. And you're just going to have to learn too many things too quickly to get it going. So like acquire one asset and then add the different layers and make it a much bigger business and then scale it to different markets, which I think is maybe an interesting play for people getting started and also acquiring an asset that is cheap on the scale of buying it versus building it. Because I think a lot of people go into it thinking build is the way to go. I can do it. It costs me, you know, $50 a month, get a website and hosting, etc. But just don't realize how much it actually takes to build any type of scale and web presence.
The time, effort, and money in getting something up to a point where you can even start to acquire your first 100 consumers is significant. And right. I get it. It's never before been less expensive to start your own digital business. But that doesn't mean it's any less hard. It's still just as hard to find your first 1,000 customers. Arguably it's more competitive than ever before, so you know, we absolutely encourage acquisition entrepreneurship, because as you just said, you get to learn, you get to acquire the traction that it's got, and from there you can build it out to whatever you wanted to build it out to anyway.
Right, absolutely. Blake, is there any type of data that or stats that you can share just regarding categories of sites that's being sold on Flippa? What's the largest category? Any type of spreads of what's popular now?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that the keyword search data numbers is different in April than it was in January. Bear with me 10 seconds as it's loading. Okay, so I've got it here. Yeah. So in January, and get this, people on Flippa. Now we see over 10 million searches on Flippa a month. Wow! So you've got enough data from which to pull the insights. And number one, you could probably guess this, but number one was travel in January. So in January, people were searching using Flipper and using the keyword travel. Number two was Amazon. Number three was CBD. Number four was blog. Now, of course, people can search by keyword, so it's not necessarily category, business model, or other. It's a whole collection. So travel, Amazon, CBD, blog. Number five was AdSense. Now, that's changed. So in April, the number one was AdSense. That's gone from five to number one. Huh. Number two was blog. Number three was Amazon. Number four was fitness, which, by the way, fitness wasn't even in the top. Where was it? Just scrolling down here. Fitness was it snuck into the top 30 only just.
What?
Seems crazy. This was in January.
Yeah.
So in April, that was fitness. And then number five was education.
Oh, my God. Blake, can I license a data feed of this? I'm so glad we got into this. This is amazing data.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
And, this is amazing.
And it just shows you. And this is no doubt the same for our friends over at Google. But obviously, we're not doing anywhere near the volume. But the numbers are still significantly big enough that you can draw all sorts of conclusions. And this took us by surprise. So we weren't running this analysis previously, by the way, but we are now, which is pretty exciting.
Oh my God. I bet that data is infinitely valuable to private equity companies and all sorts.
Yeah, it sure is.
Give me that feed. I want that feed.
There's a funny one in here, which I'm struggling to get my head around, and dating has slipped into the top 10. And I don't know whether that's because sophisticated or mature buyers are thinking, okay, well, the dating industry might be in be challenged now, but it will obviously come back big time. So maybe I'll go and see if there's an asset available today that's not as high valued as it otherwise might have been, and snap that one up. So I don't know why that slipped into the top 10, but it has.
Yeah, that's an odd one, because I would just say, hey, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. It's way too competitive, and it's full of all types of crazy loaded affiliates anyways. But, man, that's interesting data. The fitness one absolutely makes sense, right? Like, everything is home fitness right now, and it's going to be for a while. But, man, you could really identify some interesting trends pretty quickly just through that search data. 10 million people searching a month. Wow.
Yeah, and look, there's some really interesting stuff in here. I mean, garden was not in, what have I got? In this list I'm looking at right now, I must admit I'm only looking at the top 35 for some reason, and I think it's just what our head of product pulled for me. But garden as a keyword was not in the top 35, but all of a sudden found itself in the top 15. So there's some really interesting trends in this data. Yeah. It's pretty cool stuff.
Very cool. You mentioned the kind of average price that was selling for websites, so 30,000 to 50,000. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean the exact number is 39, but we tend to say that the Flipper sweet spot is 30 to 50.
And would you say almost all of those at that sweet spot in that kind of 30 to 50 range are generating some type of revenue, or are some of those strictly just assets that have no revenue?
99.9% would be income producing. You do see some assets where it's a bit of tech. And it just hasn't been realized. The value of it hasn't been realized, but the buyer doesn't want to build the tech, likes the look of the tech, and is willing to pay, $20,000 to $50,000 for it, because it saves them from going and hiring an engineer to build exactly the same concept they had in their head anyway.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And, it's all good and well to say, well, I can find a cheap engineer who can do it myself. We often see buyers say, yeah, but I can do it myself. As you and I both know, it's actually pretty hard to get a high quality product up and running.
Yeah.
It's easy to build an MVP, but one that's working and ready to be marketed is a different story altogether.
Yeah, no, I did this exact same thing, and I was going to start a brewery in Thailand. Thank God I didn't. And I had a chat with my buddies that were actually in Australia, and they were starting a brewery, and I was bouncing around ideas with them. Like, holy crap, they got their stuff so much better organized than I do, and this is just going to take years to scale. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do mine. And I was like, you think I could invest in yours instead? And that was one of the best business decisions I've ever made, because mine in Thailand, no way it would have worked out. And I think that's a very good point, is that like we were saying before, it's just the time element of getting something up and scaled is it always seems a lot easier. And a lot of entrepreneurs are the happiest they ever were in the business was the day they had the idea, because they didn't realize how much actually work is going to go into it after they break ground. And I think a big movement in the future is actually just going to be moving towards buying something that's established versus starting something from scratch.
Yeah, well, we're big advocates for that. Obviously, we love this idea that there's a whole network of people out there who are really, really outstanding creators and makers. And then there's a whole different network of people out there who are really good at running something, mm-hmm. or at least better at running something. And so they're kind of a match made in heaven.
That's right. Blake, a couple quick questions more on the buy sell side.
Yeah.
How many of your buyers are repeat buyers versus first time buyers? Do you have any data on that?
Yeah, and it's a very convenient number, I must admit. So 50% of our transaction volume is from repeat buyers. And let me just give a definition of repeat. So they're two or more sites per year. So I must admit it's a pretty loose definition. But two or more sites in a 12-month period of time is defined as repeat. And 50% of our value is from repeat. We do have some power buyers who are spending, they're buying lots of assets and they're spending between $250,000 and $1.5 million per year. And they're doing that across, anything from, 10 assets at approximately $25,000 might be representative of the $250,000 spend. And on the $1.5 million spend, it might be that they're buying, this particular individual I'm thinking of is buying assets as small as $7,500 and as big as $325,000. So he's clearly got a big range, but he's got a very, very specific buying pattern and a very, very specific use case. And so every time he sees something, he'll go and snap it up pretty quickly. And one of the things we want to start doing for our sellers is just recognizing who these buyers are, because it means the seller can move really quickly.
Right. Yeah, I got it. And then how about the transition process between buyers and sellers? What's usually involved in that? I guess more from the buyer side, just trying to anticipate what that process looks like.
Yeah, so the first thing is an asset register. So obviously getting a list of all of the assets which are included in the sale. And I think we should point out to your listeners that, these are asset sales. They're not company sales and they're not share sales. They're more often than not asset sales. So there's the asset register. Then there's the escrow process itself. So depositing the monies in, recognizing that monies is in, and then going about the asset transfer. And of course, depending on the asset, there's more complexities around that on some than there are others. If it's a content website, it's typically very, very quick. Mm-hmm. But the escrow process essentially allows for an inspection period. That's typically 7, 14, 21 or 30 days. And in that period of time, the buyer will inspect the assets as listed in the asset register and then accept the assets. We don't actually assist in the transfer of the individual assets, and that's purely because unlike a broker, we've got so many transactions going through in any given month. Mm-hmm. It is set up to be peer-to-peer, so we obviously integrate with escrow.com and actually other payment services also if people prefer.
Got it.
And then they take over that transfer process mostly themselves. We have contracts of sale and letters of intent, memorandum mm-hmm. of understanding templates available as part of the buying process, and some people will either use those or they'll seek independent guidance from a lawyer or in some cases an accountant also.
Blake, from the seller standpoint, what can be expected on the seller side for fees when they list something on Flippa?
Yeah, it's a good question, particularly because we've just updated our success fee pricing. So mm-hmm. there's really two pieces. One, people pay a listing fee, and that listing fee is no more than $49. There are some upgrades available if people want them. So, for example, people can buy a listing review and optimization report that's only $29. They can also buy a non-disclosure agreement to protect their listing at a confidentiality level. And then the where we make our money is success fees. So they are payable when an asset is sold on the platform. That's a variable fee, excuse me. And so an asset sold up to $50,000 is 10%, but then it starts to get less expensive at that point in time. So 50 to 100 is 7.5, and anything over 100K is 5%.
Got it. Anything over 100, 5%. Cool. Love it. Well, you know, as CEO of the company, and I mean, just talking about some of the data that runs through the platform, I know my mind, and I would see this stuff and just get lost for hours each day looking at this stuff. Also on the opportunity side, I mean, you're seeing all these sites get listed, all these digital assets every day being put up on Flippa. Do you ever have time to kind of dig through and just say, damn, I think this one looks like a great deal? Or do you try to stay removed from that stuff? Because I'm sure it's a bit of a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really cool data that you can't help but get into and then think through and potentially use for the purposes of marketing or productizing it in some way. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can help think through that, and that's really fun. I must admit, over the last 18 months, I've been benefited by an awesome team which has come into the Flippa environment, and I must admit they do a lot of the data digging and analyzing and are kind of responsible for presenting some sort of high level insights to me, which mm-hmm. we can then use and talk about at our growth meetings, etc. Mm-hmm. But there's some really, really cool insights there, and COVID-19 and this period has given us reason to get closer to the data and make decisions on behalf of our customers accordingly. So I think I'm probably closer today than I was 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Do you get to take a look at some of your favorite listings? Do you have some favorite listings that are on Flippa right now that we could put out to our listeners?
Yeah, so I absolutely love seller stories. I love why sellers got into the business in the first place. I love why they're so passionate about what they've built, and I love that a buyer can potentially take over something that they're just as passionate about. And so I do spend a lot of time looking at listings, and I spend a lot of time talking to our sellers just to try to get to understand them and why they're doing what they're doing. And obviously they provide outstanding insights back to us as a company. I've got a couple of favorites right now. There's one that's called, and I like them for different reasons. There's one that's called Be Loved Blog. It's a 9-year-old wedding website. And of course, weddings are really challenged right now, but let's face it, the wedding industry is probably not going away long term. It's gone away short term. And I reckon it will probably bounce back pretty hard. So I like this one because it's a UK-based seller, but with a very, very large US organic traffic base. It's got a really, really strong search following, and it's got some great keyword coverage. I also like the age in it too. So it's 9 years old, and I think there's a lot to be said for analyzing the seasonality in a business of that age. And I must admit, I can't get away from just the value of that industry long term. I think the wedding industry is a pretty good one. So that's one. There's one that's called I Heart Posh Shop. And I must admit, I like businesses that go after a niche. And this business sells fashion products, which obviously isn't that niche, but specifically it's the plus size community. And so, there's clearly not enough competition in the plus size community. It's growing, but I think that there's a lot of room for opportunity here. It's US based, as most of our listings are. It's got some age on it. It's 8 years old. It's well priced at, I think 1.6 to 1.2 is the range. Sorry, 1.6 to 2 is the range. As I said, not as competitive as some mainstream women's fashion retailer keywords. And that one's on sale for $90,000. There's a really cool SaaS business on the site right now. It's called Ninja Outreach. It's pretty cool. I think it's up to 30,000 buyer views. People really like the look of it. It's not cheap. It's not a small asset. It's an influencer marketing platform. Again, it's US-based. It's 5 years old. It's doing $60,000 monthly. I like it because I think through this period and coming out of this period, social will continue to soar. And I think, amazingly, influencer marketing is still a relatively new phenomenon. There's actually very, very few companies who are using influencer marketing really constructively, and they've got some big trustworthy brand clients. So I like to look at that asset.
So that's doing $60,000 a month in revenue or profits?
Profit.
Wow.
$3 million selling price. Got lots of interest.
That is healthy. Holy moly. Well, we'll have to leave a link to all three of those in the show notes. But it's really cool to see. Yeah, it's cool to see these, these big names and these big companies that are very healthy on the P&L that are listing with Flippa. I'll have to take a look at that even more after this episode, man. That's great. So on the buy side, and touch on Corona and where we're at right now. What are you guys seeing? We talked a little bit about the data earlier. What are you seeing with the trends and search in different types of categories? Do you see new buyer motivations that maybe have changed through this kind of economic downturn and titanic shift that we're going through right now?
Yeah, so people are less willing to take high value risks. So we've seen less high value sites sell and far more low value sites sell. So that's been an interesting thing. Actual number of assets listed is flat. So sellers, I must admit, it's tough to talk to their motivations right now because we're just not seeing a trend up or down in actual asset listings volume. But what has been super cool to watch is just a monster increase in the number of buyers registering their preferences on our platform. So what happens is, and of course it's free to do so, and I'd encourage people to do so. You can just register for free and you can set your preferences. So by location, which is at this stage country-based, business model, obviously, things like e-commerce, content, SaaS, etc. Categories, travel, food, health, wellness, fitness, etc. Some of those things we went through in the search volume. And of course, budget. And so we've seen a monster increase. There were 23,000 new registered buyers in April, the prior month. And so, by the way, we don't actually spend any money on marketing. So that's organic acquisition. This is people who are genuinely interested in acquiring an asset. Now, it takes some time, but these are leading indicators for us, and it's exciting to see. At the same time, it's obviously a challenging macro environment. So these people are registering because they're clearly looking to supplement their income or replace their income. And so I will empathize absolutely and say that, I think that it's a super challenging time and we're here to help. And if anyone's newly registered, reach out and say hello and we'll help you through the process, because whilst we're seeing the demand, it's important that these people make the right decisions.
I think a part of that demand too is people are getting comfortable working from home and saying, I'm never going back to the office. And if they make me go back to the office, I'm not going to go. So I might want to come up with a plan B as well. I think the majority of people want to control their own earnings and have flexibility in work schedule and work location. And that's either going to be demanded. About. Yeah, it's either going to be demanded at the corporate level or people are going to take it into their own hands.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's why we talk about the own your future concept that we live by here at Flippa, which is obviously this idea that you can take your own income earning abilities into your own hands. And you can do that by obviously starting something, but you can equally do it by buying something. And we think that it's a trend that was obviously there, but with COVID-19, as you said, we're all working from home. We've all got big dreams and imaginations, and now's the time to act.
All right. Well, Blake, before we close out, what do you see the future of Flippa? How do you see things evolving from here on out? Not necessarily dependent on COVID-19 and the shift that we're going through, but what's your vision for the future?
Yeah, I mean, there's more digital assets than there are cars. Our vision is to make buying a digital asset just as ubiquitous as buying a car. It's obviously a big dream and a big ambition and vision, but we think it's the future. for us, that means making the listing process really, really simple, making our pricing accessible for almost anyone throughout the world, and then ultimately being the very best worldwide at connecting the dots. And that's as simple as saying that when a seller lists an asset, there'll be a set of buyers which are most relevant for that asset. And so we want to get to a point where it's less about how many views your listing has had, which is outstanding right now, but it's more about pinpoint buyer matching. So if your asset is only right for five people, well, let's present it to those five people. So that's what we're working on, and there's a lot under the hood to make all of that come alive. But we've never before had a more motivated product team. We've never before been as customer centric as we are now. So we think we're making the right decisions. We're pretty decisive in our decision making. We're working really quickly, and I think some of the changes we've made with things like search and some of the partnerships we've got with people like Guidant Financial and QuickBooks Online and things like that, we're pretty excited for providing a platform that empowers people to make choices about their future and do that really easily.
I love it. Well, I look forward to that future date when it's when buying a digital asset is unambiguous. Is what's that word? Unambiguous.
Ubiquitous. Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous. That's a good one. Yeah. It must be one that was originated down in down under.
That's right.
Before we close out, Blake, anything else you want to leave the listeners with? Any tips for new buyers, and of course, how to find out more from Flippa?
Yeah. So first and foremost, check out flippa.com. Obviously, jump onto our blog. You can see a first-time buyer's guide there. It's really prominently positioned on the top right-hand side of the blog. So there's about 3 hours worth of video content, and all of that video footage is written up for your viewing pleasure. So check that out. As I said, you know, place safe bets. Look for something which is where you've got subject matter expertise and you can actually add value. And then finally, it's all about passion, right? So buy something that you can actually imagine working on. That would be my tips. And obviously, reach out to us, and we're here to help.
Love it. Thanks, Blake. I mean, this has been real. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm looking at my wine glass. It's empty, so it's time to fill it back up. But I appreciate you coming on. I think everyone's going to enjoy this deep dive into Flippa and the online business world. I can't wait to share it with everyone. So I appreciate you.
Thank you very much. It's been awesome to chat. Thanks very much.
Cha-ching. That is the sound that I keep hearing every time I log on to flippa.com and I start thinking, what can I buy or what can I sell to make some money?
Dude, we got into the right industry going back, whatever, 10 years ago. How long have you been doing online stuff, Johnny?
About since 2013, so about 7 years now.
7 years, yeah. So I started in 2009. Man, this just reinvigorates me to do more and more online. I never want to do retail. There's just so many opportunities online, but it's such a delicate and specialized skill set, right? That's why for online businesses, there's just not that many people that you can hire to run them compared to a coffee shop or a mattress store, right? There's a gazillion people out there that are qualified to run those, but it's very difficult to get someone to on board like Blake to take over a marketplace and scale it. So you got to really invest in your own skill sets to be able to conquer this industry.
Yeah, definitely. Especially because if someone actually had all the skill sets, they're probably an entrepreneur. They would rather work for themselves than work for a salary or even work for, you know, even a profit share with someone else.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why it's always really challenging to find really skilled marketers for online stuff, because as soon as they achieve some level of success and see how much value that they add to an operation, they start a side hustle, and then that side hustle becomes big, and then they quit your job and run their own thing. That's how almost everybody who's successful in the space starts. And they're increasingly difficult to come across because it's so easy to start your own thing online.
Yeah. And also on the flip side, the time it takes to train someone up from scratch, you know, it's not, you might as well just have done the work yourself. And
yeah,
at the end of the day, they get so much value. I mean, either one or two things can happen. One is they're either going to be a terrible employee and a terrible entrepreneur, and you're going to wish you never wasted your time training them, or they're going to succeed. They're going to become a wonder kid, and then they're going to leave you because they're going to realize, hey, I can just do this on my own.
Yeah, so true, and it happens all the time, all the time. Man, I love the online space. I love digital assets.
Yeah.
I love seeing automated revenues come in. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching.
So speaking it's addicting, of which, man. I have the Shopify app on my phone that notifies me every time there's a new sale in one of my e-commerce stores. And because I'm in this weird time zone, all the sales come, you know, overnight while I'm sleeping. And I wake up and, you know, I turn on my phone. The first thing I get is a message from my mom. And then my buddy Chris is sending me like whatever the weird latest news is. And then I get a cha-ching almost every day, like clockwork, you know, new sale, you know, the XYZ store got a new sale, you know, $1,200 today. XYZ store got a new sale, you know, $1,500 today. And that store that I'm talking about, like, never did that well. Like, I've been running it with a partner for about a year, and it would do like a few sales a month, you know, a few thousand dollars in revenue a month. It was so low that I never even really bothered collecting profits from it, even though I own 25% of the store and he runs it. This month, our sales went from that store, it went from having a monthly kind of average of making, you know, $3,000 a month, or, you know, $5,000 a month, to the last 30 days, we've now sold $48,000 worth of products. Like, by far the best month ever. And it's only because people are locked at home with nothing to do but order stuff online.
And that's the beauty of it too, right? It can grow that quickly. And because these things often take zero to a few dollars just to keep online, it doesn't cost you any sweat or any money just to keep it there, right? And then all of a sudden there's some type of trend shift, or in this case, you know, a incredibly large scale change in how people work and spend their time. And you just happen to be in the right place at the right time, and now you're capitalizing on it. But if you had a coffee shop, for instance, you know, if this happens, you're out of business, right? But if it's a digital asset, you can basically keep it operating for no cost in a lot of cases. And in this case, timing ended up being right a few years later down the road, and now you're making money. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I just pulled it up. Sales for all February, $3,010. Sales for all of March, $30,000. Sales for the last 30 days. So actually just this month, so far, it's not even the end of the month yet, 48,000. So just insane.
How much of that's profit?
Our margins are about 28-32%. So minus the advertising costs, some, you know, shipping costs, things like that. But yeah, it should be a pretty decent month.
Yeah, you're counting money. You're counting money right now. I love it. Oh, yeah, man. Actually, boy.
The point of the store was never to just cash flow monthly. It was really just to run it, grow it, and then sell it on a site. So, you know, flip it for, you know, whatever it is, 27 months profit.
Yeah, and this is a great position to be in. It costs you basically no overhead to run it.
29 probably bucks a month.
Out of sight, out of mind. So you're not even in a position now that you feel like you need to sell it, because you're making so much money month over month that it's like, okay, someone comes along and pays the right price, cool. If not, I'll just kind of sit back in this hammock and collect dough. Yeah, so yeah. This reminds me of I started affiliate marketing back in 2008, 2009. And a couple of guys that I'd done pretty good work for out of college was like, hey, next time we have something good going on, we'll bring you into it. And I was working road construction at the time, you know, guy in a fluorescent vest doing jackhammer on the side of the road. That was me. And these guys called me up like, hey, do you know how to run Google ads? And I'm like, yep, of course I do. I didn't, you know, I went home and researched it that night and put up a little test campaign to have something of substance to know what I'm talking about. Anyways, these guys are like, hey, we got this thing, it's working, we need someone to run it, we'll show you how to do it, you know, you're our laborer, you're our workhorse. I'm like, cool, count me in. So anyways, they show me how to do affiliate marketing. We're selling all types of nutrition products, mostly diet pills, online. And I remember we got up to $100 a day, right? It was like six sales or something, and I'm in like my Jeep Wrangler going 90 miles an hour down I-95, like my hand in the air, listening to 80s music. And I'm like, this is the most amazing thing ever. $100 profit. I'm making like $40 a day on the side of doing road construction. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. And this guy's like, dude, you're talking about doing $100 a day and you think this is awesome? You have no idea how big it is online, how big the digital landscape is. I know people that are doing 5,000 sales a day, doing the exact same thing we are, and you're happy doing five. And that really made me stop and think just how big and expansive the online space is, right? And at that time, it was 2009, got a little bit more into figuring out strategies on how to do this. And basically, over the course of 6 weeks, went from $100 a day to $40,000 a month, right?
Wow.
And that and then at that point, I'm like, I'm making a lot of money. It got to a point where I was making I think the top was about $28,000 a day personally. And I'm like 23, living at my parents' house, driving a beat up old Jeep Wrangler. And I'm like, I just could not believe the type of money that we're bringing in, right? I figured it was too good to be true, and it was. But at one point I went down to Miami with these guys thinking I'm such a high roller. And we go into this club. If anyone's from Miami, it's called Set. And I'm this 23-year-old punk, and here are these two guys that are like my mentors, and I'm so loyal to them. And as soon as we get into the club, I immediately see trouble. Like, where one of the guys is dating a girl, and there's the ex-boyfriend's there, and there's this, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be the man here. Walk up and immediately upon like sticking my chest out, wham, get punched straight between the eyes. My BlackBerry goes flying across the room, and before I can stand up, a bouncer's got me by my underwear and runs me out the door, throws me onto the curb, no phone, nothing, busted forehead. And because these guys had already ordered like 15 bottles of Cristal, and they didn't even know where I was, I didn't have my phone, they just ended up sitting in there and drinking the Cristal and having this crazy party while 23-year-old busted up Sam is just on the curb sitting outside like a little kid. And they ended up putting these guys, who both are still good friends of mine now, they ended up putting the tab on our, you know, quote unquote company. It was like $22,000 or something but that was like one day's profit, right? It was less than one day's profit at the time. So it was like, whatever, this is part of the game. I didn't really care. But, man, the affiliate days were just, I know there's a lot of affiliate marketers out there listening to this podcast, a lot of e-com guys. I mean, you just heard Johnny's story about how much money he's making basically sitting in a hammock right now. And there really is nothing better. And it takes some time to appreciate that, because you often have to build a bigger full-scale business with so many moving pieces and heavy staff and everything just to appreciate how awesome like a 1-to-2-person simple online operation is. And this is what this episode reminds me of, is how wonderful it was back in those days, how much money we're making, how simple it was. Advertise here, collect money here, bada bing, bada boom, 1-2 people. And that's what Johnny has going on right now. I know that's what a lot of people listening to this podcast right now have going on or want to start. And it's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah. And I think even in 2020, like, you know, we're thinking, oh, you know, we're thinking back 7 or 10 years ago, thinking like, oh, yeah, those are the golden ages. You know, those are the good old days. I will guarantee you that in 5 or 10 years, we're going to look back thinking, man, I can't believe in 2020 we were able to, you know, put videos on YouTube for free. And not only was it free, but they would, you know, they give you free traffic and they would pay you to have your video, you know, your videos on there. Like, I guarantee something like that is going to change. But we're going to look back thinking, man, those were the good old days.
Man, it's not going to stop. It's not going to slow down. There's going to be more and more ways to make money online. I'll tell you what, back then, 2008 to 2012, maybe, that was the Wild West in affiliate marketing. It was this new frontier. Not too many people knew how to market online. And there was just ridiculous offers to make money if you knew what you were doing and how to advertise and acquire traffic. I think the most recent Wild West was crypto. Massive spike. Tons of people made money. A lot, obviously, in decent ways. But that was the Wild West. You know what I think the new one is going to be?
What?
I don't know if it's a little bit more narrow, a little bit more niche. But from what I hear coming out of China right now, TikTok is going to be like this new incredible platform to make money on. Apparently there's like some of the sales that are coming off of TikTok, because TikTok's building their own e-com platform and own like affiliate links. So you can put up a TikTok video and you can put a link to TikTok, and then you're making the commissions are like 20% or something for the affiliates. And I got a couple buddies in China right now that they're like, dude, these people are selling noodles online and they're making like $500,000 a day selling noodles as an affiliate.
Wow. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, people forget that attention is attention. It used to be, you know, commercials on TV during a show, and people would spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to have, you know, a million eyeballs. What if you can get a million eyeballs on your, you know, dance channel of you, or, you know, your mukbang, you know, video of you eating noodles, and you say, yeah, if you want to buy these same noodles, click here.
That's exactly it. And if you have a coffee shop, the max amount of people walking by your coffee shop any given day is maybe a few hundred. If you're in a big city, maybe a few thousand. But as soon as you put something online, you have the potential to have 2-3 billion people come across your site and product in a day. Now, they're not all going to come there. You got to find ways to get them there. But that just shows you the scale, where a retail store only has a finite amount of traffic that can come by that store. But online, as soon as you have that website live, or you're on Amazon or whatever, there's basically unlimited potential demand that could be at your store the next day. And that's what's really exciting. That's that lottery ticket that's in your pocket that Johnny's just experienced this month out of nowhere. And that's why, you know, you wake up every morning excited, you go to sleep every night not knowing just when that big payoff could come.
Yeah, and a lot of times just things just take a while. Like, it's really hard to get, for example, your first 100 visitors to your website, or your first $100 in online sales. Mm-hmm. It is really hard. It can take you months or years. But to go from 100 to 1,000 is pretty fast. And then once you get 1,000 to 10,000, super easy. And then from 10,000 to 100,000, like, it's actually not that hard of a big of a deal. And what's really insane is once you're making $100,000, you know, in sales, or if you have 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, for example, to go from there to a million isn't 10 times harder. It's like, it's literally just, you probably just keep doing what you've been doing to get to that place, you know, from 100 to 1,000. And you'll wake up one day and you'll have $1 million in revenue, or you have 1 million followers on TikTok, or you have 1 million, you know, subscribers on YouTube. And you'll be like, oh, yeah, like, I don't know when that happened, but it just happened.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And if you just keep with it, too, it's going to build over time. You just got to stick with it, you know, add that content, do a little bit better each week, especially stuff that, like, Johnny, like you're doing. You like doing this stuff anyways. It's not like it's work for you. You go out and make some YouTube videos about surfing or your crib, you know, your $8 a night bungalow in Sri Lanka. So it's stuff you like doing anyways. And over time, the cumulative effect becomes meaningful, right? And it supports your lifestyle.
So here's what's crazy is, so right down the street from me was another YouTuber named Harold Baldor, and we had kind of randomly connected online somehow. So someone had mentioned, like, hey, I think you guys are in the same town, you guys should hang out. And this guy makes, you know, random YouTube videos, like, no editing. He's just walking around saying, like, oh yeah, this is, you know, my, you know, $2 meal in Sri Lanka. This guy gets 1 million views on pretty much all his videos. And
jeez,
it's insane. And I'm like, I'm making a very similar video to this guy, and I'm, you know, I'm like lucky to get 1,000 views, you know, and maybe he doesn't get 1 million for each video, but yeah, like a couple 100,000 for each video and over 1 million for the popular ones. But I'm like, God, you know, for me to go from 1,000 to 1 million seems like such a big leap. But talking to him, he's basically like, yeah, just keep doing it, Johnny. Like, you'll get there.
Is he some jacked Swedish guy or?
No. I think
he's. Dude, you know what?
You
know what I've been getting into on video, speaking of YouTube stuff? So all the home fitness, because, you know, I need some inspiration to work out. It's really hard right now for me just like start pumping out push-ups in my box. So there's this fitness chick called Pamela Reif, mm-hmm. and she does, like, I would say 8 to 20 minute workouts, but they're nonstop. Like, you don't get a 1 minute break, right? Mm-hmm. And she's so hot, and she, like, her videos are amazing. She doesn't talk. She's just like, she almost looks like some like Russian Barbie doll. I think she's American, but she's always doing. She puts out a new video every day. Check it out. It's like 10 minutes. You do, like, you know, do an ab workout for 10 minutes. See if you can do it. It's like a really good physical challenge, because the first time you do one of it, you probably only can go for like 1 to 2 minutes. But if you stick with it for like 2 weeks, by the end, you can do the 10 minutes without stopping. It's pretty awesome. But these fitness videos are pretty cool. Like, I think this is this whole new home, I don't know what's the word. Yeah, home fitness, I guess. that's going to be a big new thing. And these YouTubers are starting to blow up.
Yeah, especially because it's a big transition from paying for knowledge or paying for content. You know, either, you know, because 5-10 years ago, if you wanted to watch videos like this, you'd have to drive somewhere and go to a physical class. But even mm-hmm. when they started having it available to watch at home, you'd have to buy a DVD or a cassette.
Yeah.
Or you'd have to sign up for some kind of subscription. But now with YouTube and kind of the revenue model, you know, like basically as a YouTube creator, we get a share of the ads that get shown on our channel. So the more people that mm-hmm. are watched, the more people that are engaged, you know, it's basically like having our own little TV channel. So there's all these, you know, fitness people who are thinking, well, instead of me selling these videos for $29 each, why not just put them online for free? Because it takes her the same amount of work to create and edit the video for 10 people to watch or 100 people to watch versus yep. a million people to watch. So she might as well just right. put it out there, get as many eyeballs on it as possible and make money that way.
Yeah, exactly. And then and also, I mean, she can do this for a year without introducing a product, build up her audience, get millions of views on each video. And then once she has the subscribers, then she can start introducing products, services, supplements, and of course, monetize each video just through the ads.
Yeah. So that's actually exactly what I've been doing during this quarantine. I decided to do a completely free dropshipping course on my YouTube channel. And mm-hmm. It's going to be like a 12-part series where I originally was thinking like, oh, you know, first off, it's not a work. But second, like if I'm going to do this, I might as well charge for it. But I decided, you know what? I have all this free time. I have all this knowledge. Let me just do this as an experiment. And I'm just going to put it out there for free and then make money off of the YouTube ad revenue, but also through the affiliate links. So if somebody, you know, signs up for Shopify or something through my link, I'll get that. Mm-hmm. And so far, I mean, it's only been up for a few days, but I've gotten, I think a couple hundred more subscribers, tons of people opting into the email list. And I see potential. Like, it's a free course and it's good. So who knows? Like, hopefully someone will share it and then I'll have 10,000 people sign up for my email list and then I'll be able to sell them, you know, other things through that link and say like, you know, and then they've gotten all this free value from me already. This could be the way I grow my YouTube channel from 18,000 people to 100,000 people.
Yeah. And then you set up an office in Sydney, Australia and become a corporate exec of your own empire.
We'll see. I'm pretty sure I'll still be sitting on hitting Sri Lanka and having coconuts.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would just encourage everyone out there. I mean, I listened to Howard Marks's recent episode with Tim Ferriss, and like I said, a lot of the smart hedge fund guys, big money guys, they think that 2022 is going to be when things come back. And the scary thing about that is probably the Fed will continue to print and print and print and bail out businesses and house owners, mortgages, etc. But a lot of people are still going to lose their jobs. And if this virus kicks up, you know, it's hard to see family, right? There's a second wave, challenging to see family, challenging to go out and really socialize. And if you're concerned about your job or you got laid off, this could really be a shitty couple of years ahead. Like, not to be a doomsdayer, but it could be, you could look back and be like, man, I learned how to play ukulele and I read a bunch of books. But other than that, like, you know, I got laid off, couldn't really see family, couldn't socialize. It could suck. And so the way to capitalize on this is, of course, learning new things. But this is the time to be doing an online business. This is the time to be owning your future and building something online, because obviously the online businesses are there. They're doing well and they're going to for our lifetime. There's nothing that's going to make online businesses not be successful in our lifetime at an increasing rate. So if you're out there and you're thinking about getting started on this or you're just new to the concept, go back, listen to the episodes we had with Ace Chapman, Kingmakers, Empire Flippers, of course, this one, Flippa. Dig into this stuff and figure out a point to get started, even if it's starting your own blog about how shitty it is in the box, locked up wherever you are, you know? Start something online, buy something online, and capitalize on this time, because you don't want to be a victim of these 2 years. You want to be a winner. That's what you want to be. So this is one way to do it.
I love it. Fantastic. Sam, I would like you to start a blog during this time and it's going to be about how crappy life is in Charlotte.
In the box. In the box. Well, Sam, I got a lot of material for that. I got a lot of complaining to do, so.
Saminabox.com.
Let's see if... See if I can buy something on Flippa and then put it on that domain. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah, I love it. So actually, I inspired by Flippa, I started looking through all my old websites that I still have up and running, and I'm still paying, you know, $14 a year to renew the domains. And I'm thinking about selling my Muay Thai blog. It's something I've had up since 2011, so it's 9 years aged. It still gets a decent amount of traffic, and it's not monetized now. That's the only problem. I wish I had kept it monetized with affiliate links, or at least, you know, I think I checked my AdSense and I got like 13 cents a month from it for the last couple of months. So that's not going to be much. But I feel like it's an asset that somebody can buy it. Somebody, you know, who's into MMA or Muay Thai or kickboxing, and somebody could just take it over and just rebuild it. So I think the only thing that stopped me was I think I got to the last step and I was like, you know what? If I'm going to spend $49 to list this, like, what if nobody even buys this? And I paused it, but we'll see. I might still sell it.
Yeah, throw it on Flippa. That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be a good experiment.
You can say you sold another. You can say you sold another business. Just don't tell anyone that it was for $49.
Or I lost $49 listing it.
Oh man! Oh, you got to check out Pamela Reif. She's on the screen now. I'm going to share a video with you after this. Put it in the show notes. Very inspirational.
So we got Pamela Reif on YouTube. While you're there, subscribe to Johnny FD if you want to see my box where I'm living here in Sri Lanka. Actually, it's a beautiful location. The name of the co-working space is, I can't pronounce it, like Kamalaka or something. It's in Kabalana Beach. And I think normally, you know, it's a $50 a night shared like place. It's a 5-bedroom, 5-bath villa. And the co-working space membership is normally like 100 something bucks. Right now, I'm paying $250 per month for my room, all utilities, AC, and the co-working space membership.
Pretty nice sounding right about now. You have a way of finding these gems, Johnny. I will give you that.
Yeah. On the budget, buddy. Just follow me around the world. Budget. And yeah, you know, I think your budget will be cut in by tenths.
2021, man. Getting back on the road. That's for sure.
I love it. So speaking of on the road, I want to acknowledge our new iTunes reviews. We actually have one from Hawaii that says, Gold 5 stars by Suzanne, 5 E's. I started investing in March 2020 and stumbled upon this podcast. Very informative and easy to digest. Really appreciated the March 23rd recording. I have no idea which one that was. And shared it with my friends. I'm a fan. Aloha from Hawaii. Thank you, Suzanne, and thank you for everyone else who's left reviews of the podcast on iTunes, and to all of our Patreon subscribers. You guys rock, and you guys are the reason why we continue to have so many episodes and we're able to pay for Derek, our helper who's getting all these great guests on. So shout out to Derek, and shout out to all of you guys.
Absolutely. Patreons, we love you, appreciate you, as with everybody out there listening, and it's been great having the additional hands on here at Invest Like a Boss. It's really ramped up our capacity to get out there and schedule some awesome new guests. And we got a killer lineup coming up for the next few months. I don't know what you want to call the next few months, more quarantine months, more quarantine episodes. But we got some great guests coming on, and we're just going to keep going out and getting the best names. So if there's anyone that you want us to have on the show, be sure to drop it in Boss Lounge or the Patreon group. We'll be sure to go out there and try to get them on the show.
Yeah, and another new benefit to the Patreon members is we'll let you know a week in advance who the next guest is before we do the recording. And that way you can ask questions and influence Sam of asking those questions on the interview. So hopefully, you know, it's like your connection with these big bosses.
That's right. I love it. And thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. SamInTheBox.com coming online soon. Keep an eye out for that. And thanks to Blake for coming on the show and talking about Flippa and everything that's under the hood there. Super interesting. We'll leave links. Of course, a lot of you guys know Flippa, but they have some new category searches that you can check out. Buy your future job, recession-proof stuff, first online businesses, stuff like that. So check it out and see if you come up with something that's interesting. If anyone's had experience buying on Flippa, be sure to share that in our forums as well.
All right. Sounds good. See you guys all next week. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.